Noble Prince of Peace. Commentary for the January 30th, 2021 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. Woe to those who make unjust laws, to those who issue oppressive decrees to deprive the poor of their rights and withhold justice from the oppressed of my people, making widows their prey and robbing the fatherless. What will you do on the day of reckoning when disaster comes from afar? To whom will you run for help? Where will you leave your riches? Isaiah 10, verses 1 through 3. Over 2.5 millennia ago, during Isaiah's time, the people were often ruled over by despotic kings, who were surrounded by sycophantic nobles intent on enriching themselves at the expense of the people. Like cannibals, they would also prey upon one another, probing for weaknesses that would allow them to assume the power and wealth of their victim. If they could prevail upon the king to make a law that would enhance those possibilities, they would do so. To encourage the king in their favor, they would make him a silent partner in their crime by directing a portion of the gain to him. When the poor complained about the oppression and theft, they were referred to as not deserving what little they had and were despised for their lack of initiative. Like magicians, the rich would get the poor to look the other way, claiming that the biggest threat was not the rich, but other enemies who wanted to take what little they still had. Foreigners living among them would take their menial jobs from them and would further threaten to increase the number of property crimes and assaults. They were the real enemy and not the rich who kept these threats at bay. Didn't the rich deserve their wealth for providing such a valuable service? And besides, living in such a blessed country, even the poor could become rich one day, if they survive, if they don't end up in prison or dead. Justice was not equal. The poor and the foreigner were far more likely to be ruled against than the rich. The rich were often the ones who hauled them into court in the first place. This likely made the neighborhoods of the poor into violent crime zones. Desperate to obtain what little they could not obtain it from the rich, hidden behind their walls and guards. So they would seek violently for what they could from anyone among them that had slightly more than they did. The rich knew and understood this, so they would rarely go to those neighborhoods, and when they did, they would take plenty of protection. Should anyone question why they had so much and the poor so little, their guards were capable of reminding them that good citizens don't ask such questions. Ironically, those guards could either be recruits from the poorer neighborhoods or even foreigners made loyal by a small salary that supported them and their families. This also gave them the unrealistic hope that because the rich favored them in this way, they might also become wealthy and be welcomed into the society of the wealthy. Of course, the rich, being who they are, pay no more than the minimum necessary to keep them in their employ, and certainly not enough to become wealthy or to be welcomed into their society. How do I know all this? I know it because in over 2,500 years, human nature has changed little. Today, those same dreams that encourage the hope of becoming rich are nourished in the poor. However, the overwhelming majority who are born into poor families and attend public schools that inculcate them with the idea that they can one day be among the wealthy rulers of the land find that upon graduation, they are quickly diverted into debt. The first purchase perhaps being a car to be able to get to work so they can make the payments for the car. So a life of constant service to pay off debt begins. The car, advanced education, credit cards, and eventually a home, all are means to ensure a form of indentured servitude lasting a lifetime for most. The greater portion of one's earnings, often from a despised job, goes to pay the rich even more than they already have as the poor service this debt. At some point, called a midlife crisis, some realized that they were sold a bill of goods and that they were taught what they were taught in those public schools in no way prepared them for a prosperous future, only for a politely menial one. And so with that realization dawning, some will buy a new car, go on a long for a trip, or begin an affair, all in an attempt to find the happiness that somehow missed them. Once they have that out of their system, they settle down to a life of resigned cynicism. They have discovered it is too late to do much to correct things, and those in the next generation cannot be warned because they still have not reached the realization of midlife. When they do, it will be too late for them also. So what is the solution to this never-ending treadmill run by the rich to the detriment of the poor? Isaiah and other prophets of the Old Testament and Jesus in the New Testament have been trying to tell us for thousands of years. Notwithstanding all the preachers of the prosperity gospel, the answer is not wealth or the desire to obtain it. These individuals want us to keep worshiping those golden idols for their own enrichment. They are no better than the rest of the rich, who drain from us what little we have and keep us working for their gain and not ours, despite the promises that it will make us wealthy too. Using religion for that purpose makes it even more reprehensible than the delusions of financial hope offered up by gambling casinos. Delusions that keep people coming and paying while that ghost-like hope evaporates in their hands. Unlike those casinos, the ability to defer that hope into the afterlife makes it difficult to ever call these prosperity preachers to account. Mainline institutional religion is not exempt from challenge in this regard. Many a magnificent church has been built by the offerings of those who themselves live in comparative hovels. To what end? To glorify God? A faithful and loving heart is the only glory God cares for. No human structure can add to that. Jesus and the apostles did not require expensive buildings to gather for worship. They often used the open fields and people's homes, especially after opposition arose from those running the temple. When his disciples tried to point out how the temple in Jerusalem glorified God, Jesus' response was to tell them that it would soon be destroyed. If the wealth that is poured into the churches had been used instead to bless our neighbors, family, and friends, there might be 1,000 following Jesus today where there is only one. The hundreds of thousands each church has spent for audiovisual systems, HVAC systems, grand pianos, magnificent organs, comfortable pews, and soaring architecture with hardwood embellishments, things which neither Jesus nor his disciples had or needed, is all money wasted to make people believe that God is glorious because of the building, and by attribution that the denomination building such edifices is somehow blessed by God. It all rings rather hollow. Meanwhile, modern Christians are as guilty as the secular rich for their oppression of the poor. The meager poor funds of most churches are far outweighed many times over by the money they spend on their own need to support a voracious infrastructure and a mostly indolent cleric class. Any secular business that produced the anemic results in terms of accretions to membership from outside the denomination that are produced by the clergy of most denominations would have long since shut its doors. But I do not blame them alone for this, for the clergy are faced with spending much of their time navigating the political intrigues of the local church, where the lust for power and control is just as strong as it is outside the church. Families strive to create denominational dynasties, erroneously believing they are doing God's will, while some may have followed a pastoral calling, believing in the simple need to reach the world for Christ. They are soon enlightened to the need to subjugate that desire to the simple need to survive politically. Few pastors have never been reminded of who pays their salary and why it is necessary to placate those individuals politically. This may paint a pretty grim picture of society and the church. But this is the picture Isaiah painted in his day as well. King Manasseh was so upset by it, he had Isaiah sawn in two. When Jeremiah pointed out similar problems, he was cast into a dungeon and left to die. When Zechariah spoke up, he was killed in the very precincts of the temple. Of course, we all know what happened to Jesus for his temerity. But the reason these all were so opposed was because they promised a better way that did not involve enslavement to the rich and powerful, or the continual pursuit of a golden carrot dangled before our noses. We have the promised hope made possible by Jesus Christ. He died to bring it to us. All the gold in the world can never equal that price or that promise. He offers a chance to get off that treadmill. But will we take it? Thank you for listening to this commentary. Many more commentaries can be found at our website at Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. Blessings to you and your family, now and through the coming days, in Jesus' name.